And so that's the advice I give. You know, I often get students or, you know, people just out of college, you know, what is it that they should do? The most important thing you do is you make yourself unique. How do you differentiate yourself from somebody else? It could be language. It could be experiences. It could be education. It could be any number of things, but don't follow the path everybody else follows.
Hello and welcome to 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn, the only podcast that makes the world wiser, lesson by lesson. Here we speak with sages and luminaries, gurus and professionals and ordinary people, and dispense their wisdom to an international audience of rising leaders. My name is Robert Hossery, and I'll be your host for this episode. This podcast is supported by the Professional Development Forum, which helps diverse young professionals of any age accelerate their performance in the workplace. Today's guest is Stephen Oken. Stephen is a leader in corporate public affairs, communication, sustainability, and stakeholder engagement in Asia Pacific. Stephen serves as CEO of APAC Advisors, an ESG consultancy in the private capital sector, and as senior advisor for global strategic consultancy McClarty Associates. The AmChams of Asia Pacific, this is an umbrella group organization of 27 American chambers of commerce promoting trade and investment between Asia Pacific and the United States, elected Stephen as their chair for 2022 and 2023. As KKR's first director of Asia Pacific Public Affairs from 2011 to 2017, his responsibilities encompassed government affairs, communication, stakeholder engagement, and sustainability. From 2003 to 2010, he created and led Asia Public Affairs for UPS. Since 2017, Stephen served as senior advisor in Southeast Asia for the Global Private Capital Association. Stephen was awarded a special service commendation in the Clinton administration for his service as Deputy General Counsel at the Department of Transport. He served in the US government from 1994 to 1999. He represents his views of the business community across global media, including CNBC, CNA, and TRT. He contributes commentary to the Straits Times and does a weekly international segment for Singapore's Money FM. Stephen received his BA from the University of Virginia and his JD from the University of Virginia Law School. Welcome, Stephen, to the show, and thank you for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Robert. I'm honored and surprised that you had asked me, but happy to do it and happy to be with you again, as we've known each other over the years when I would often come to Australia with AmCham.
We have known each other, and the reason that we asked you on the show is because, as I said in my introduction, we want to get the knowledge and the wisdom from some of the brightest minds that we have come across. And Stephen, you have been championing business in Asia Pacific. You've got this cross-cultural understanding of what it takes to be successful in different cultures. So that is, I believe, that is very important for our audience and for our listeners to understand that it's not just what you do in your own little town. It's what you do as a professional globally. And it's also, these lessons can also transfer to life. Speaking of lessons, you've given us a list of 10 of your lessons, which we'll get into in a minute. But before we do that, let me ask you this. What would you have wanted to learn? So what would you say to your 30-year-old self, if you had the chance, that is the most important lesson they should have learned?
I mean, I guess and these kind of get all encompassed in the 10 we're going to talk about. But I mean, I think, you know, I thought initially, you know, you very much needed a plan. You set out that plan and you followed it. And that's just not the case. I think that's something. And along those lines, there's a lot of things in hindsight, I'd have done differently, of course. But I think the one I really would have done differently is not have gone straight from college to law school, because I thought that's what you needed to do. You know, you go to high school, you graduate in the US, you go to college for your 4 years, you graduate, you immediately go to law school, because I always wanted to be a lawyer. And if you didn't do that, if you somehow got off track, you wouldn't be able, or be tougher to get on track. And I don't know what would have happened had I taken a year off or 2 years off after I graduated from college and gotten different experiences, and certainly had opened myself up to the world at a much sooner age than I had. So that's really, I think, what I would certainly have told my 21 or 22 year old self, you know, just get some more experiences and that'll kind of lead into our discussion.
It's interesting that you say that, because I did not go to university straight out of school. I went to work, and I did my university as a mature age student, and I only got my master's 2 years ago. And I found that experience, that work experience before I got my degree, and the experience I gained before I got my master's was invaluable to me. Now, this isn't the case for everybody, but rather than going straight from school, straight into a university degree, I found that having that knowledge base of the real world enabled me to take these theories and apply them and know how they could be applied in my life. So it is interesting you say that. I mean, but in hindsight, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah. And that certainly, look, I'm no question, I did fine in law school. But I certainly would have done better and gotten more out of it, would have appreciated it much more had I had that break and gotten some of those experiences, even if it had been, you know, you got to get up every morning, you got to work every day, you've got a boss telling you what to do. Then all of a sudden you get back to the freedom of education and what you can explore and how your mind thinks. No question, I would have gotten more out of it. I got a lot out of it, but I'd have gotten even more had I taken that break.
That's excellent insight. And listeners, that is excellent advice. Okay, well, let's move on to your 10 lessons that took you 50 years to learn. So lesson number one, this is a very interesting one. And I like it. Lesson number one, make yourself unique. Now, what do you mean by that?
Well, I had always thought that I was going to have a certain plan, and that the plan I had was, and this plan like goes back to literally elementary school, right? I always wanted to be in government. I always wanted to be in politics. Well, the way to do that is obviously you go to high school, you go to college, you go to law school, you get your law degree, you go to Washington, you work in government, and that will take you quite a bit of time to do. But for a number of reasons, a lot of it luck, a lot of it timing, a lot of it, actually a little bit of my own initiative, you know, by the time I was, you know, 24 or so, I had already done that, right? I got on that track. I graduated from law school. I immediately started working on the Clinton campaign. And then when we won, and you know, we won in 92, I went to the White House in 93 and the Department of Transportation in 94. So a lot of that is luck and timing. It's working for somebody like Bill Clinton. And then it's obviously my initiative in making that happen. But what then happened and what I saw over time, over the course of my career, was that the reason I got into the Department of Transportation when I went to interview with the general counsel, and I didn't know anything about transportation law. And I said to him up front in the interview, so look, I don't know anything really about transportation. He said, I don't care. I need a young, hardworking, you know, smart lawyer, but who also worked on the campaign, who has made friends throughout the administration, because he came in as the former city attorney in Denver. So he came in with a deep transportation experience, but from outside of DC. And he says, I need somebody with your experience. And I know enough about transportation. You'll learn when you get here. So I got the job at DOT because of the experiences I had built up to that point. Mm-hmm. Then at the end of the administration, I got a call from UPS. And they said, will you come work for us and run our international aviation negotiating team? And I said, look, I've never worked for a private company. I certainly haven't worked in this sector. I've been on the outskirts of aviation negotiations, but I've never run one. And they said, don't worry about it. You know how the U.S. government thinks. And that's what we need. We don't have that. We'll teach you the rest. So I got that job because of my unique experience at DOT. And then UPS said, we want you to move to Singapore. They said that a couple of years later. And I said, I don't know anything about Asia. They said, don't worry about it. You know UPS, you know public affairs. That's what we need at this point. You'll learn Asia. So I came out to Asia. And then when KKR reached out to me, I said, well, I don't know anything about private equity. And they said, we don't care. You know Asia, you know public affairs. You'll learn private equity. And so in hindsight, looking back at what I've done by accident, was that I made myself unique along the way. And I never intended to live in Asia. I never intended to work in financial services or private equity. But all those opportunities came to me because of how I had made myself unique along the way. And so that's the advice I give. You know, I often get students or, you know, people just out of college, you know, what is it that they should do? The most important thing you do is you make yourself unique. How do you differentiate yourself from somebody else? It could be language. It could be experiences. It could be education. It could be any number of things, but don't follow the path everybody else follows. And as my boys were applying to colleges, the advice they got from admissions officers was similar to this, which was, we don't look for well-rounded kids. We look for pointy kids. And we want to get a bunch of different pointy kids. And then you put them all together and you get a well-rounded class. So make yourself pointy, which is, I was like, hey, that's what I tell people. I just say, make yourself unique. So I think that's really the most important lesson I've learned. It's the most important lesson I try to convey.
That's an incredibly valuable insight. And it's incredibly valuable and powerful advice for everyone. The question I have is, how do you make yourself unique? I mean, our skill sets are all unique because as individuals, we're unique. However, our mindset sometimes falls into this groupthink. And I believe that if I'm understanding you correctly, it's that groupthink that keeps us from being unique.
I think it's a little bit of an outside in as well, right? Because when companies or NGOs or governments or whatever employer you're looking to work with, how do they find you, right? And if your resume, if your bio, if your interview is no different than everybody else's, then you're not going to stand out. You may not, you know, may never get found. But if you could put yourself into a position where somebody says, I'm looking for somebody with these three skill sets, and you're one of the few people who have those because of your experiences, because you've gotten taken that time to learn the second, or, you know, I only know one. Now you almost need a third, like to differentiate yourself. There's so many people who've taken that step of learning a second one. So do you differentiate yourself with your language skills? Do you differentiate yourself with your experiences by going out and at a very young age, if you go to work for an NGO, or if you go to work for the government, if you go to work in the community, you'll get a lot more, not only experience, but you'll get a lot more authority because you've got to get stuff done, right? I mean, you don't have, you know, layers and layers of bureaucracy that where people are making a lot of money. And so if you get that experience as a 24-year-old, and now all of a sudden when you're 27, 28, 30, and you've learned that and you've had it, that's going to differentiate you from somebody who's just stayed at that corporate ladder going step by step by step and never had that experience. So I think that's, It gives you both. It changes your mindset, but it also makes you more attractive.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And it is a very powerful piece of advice.
And then the other thing it does by making yourself unique, you have no idea where it's going to take.
Yeah.
I make it because I had made myself unique going back to when I was, you know, 24. Again, I wasn't doing this intentionally because I wanted to do it and loved it and wanted to go work in government. But that's what got me the opportunity to come to Asia, which I had never even, that wasn't even on my radar screen. I mean, nowhere even close. So making yourself unique is going to open you up to opportunities that you never thought were there.
Brilliant. That really is a very, as I said, powerful piece of advice. And I would love to talk about this forever, but let's move on. So let's move to lesson number two, which also is not only a truism, but something that people tend to forget. The world is a big place.
Yeah. The world's a big place. It is so different. And you've really got to work to get out into it. And some people are more fortunate than others in being able to afford that. But others would have to work to make that happen. But my mindset, and you had mentioned this, Robert, earlier, my mindset has changed so much because of the exposures I've had by being out in different places and working in those different places and getting out into the community in those places. And that certainly has changed how I think. And I think has given me a different approach. You're used to just staying at home, or it's too hard to do this. It's too far away. It's too expensive. It's not on my plan. Just try and make it happen.
Definitely. A comment I make to all our listeners who just think that their own little corner of the world is it. Get out, see more, understand more, your mind will expand, especially if you're exposed to different cultures. I was lucky enough to be exposed to multiple cultures, including in business. I was lucky enough to leave Australia and go and work in the US, go and work in Taiwan, be responsible for the Middle East. So I was lucky enough to be exposed to all of these multitude of cultures. The world is a big place, but let's take that lesson and let's look at the world of business. I believe in the world of business, the world is a big place. And this comes from being told that, oh, you've got to be better than your competitors. Your competition is this, your competition is that. I personally don't believe in competition. I believe in peers in the same industry because the world is a big place. There's enough room for people to sell similar products to you. What do you think of that approach?
Well, I'll put my public affairs hat on because most of my business is in that public affairs government relations world. Like, I think all businesses, all governments, right, all countries, they think along the same lines. They want to do what's in the public interest. And they want to do it if you're, you know, in Canberra, if you're in Washington, D.C., if you're in Singapore, you're in Beijing, right? You want to do what you define as the public interest. What you need to figure out when you go into either your own government or a foreign government, how do they define what's in the public interest? And then you match what you're trying to accomplish, get a legislation passed, get a treaty signed, get a foreign direct investment restrictions, you know, lifted or eased, whatever it may be. You need to understand how to make the argument that it's in the public interest of the host government to do what you're requesting. And I think that would be a similar lesson in if you're offering a service, if you're offering a product, how are you helping somebody achieve what they're trying to achieve? And there's various different ways to do it. But I think that's the question that I always ask myself before going into to a foreign government. What is the public interest from their perspective, not what I think it should be?
Yeah. And in business, it'd be what is in the consumer's interest. Yeah,
exactly.
But the world is a big place. So concentrate on the public good as opposed to what your competitors are doing. Lesson number three is, you have to explain this one to me. I understand it, but I'm sure there's a lot more to it. Lesson number three, go for long walks.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a lot to it. I mean, you've got to give your brain time to think. And for me, you know, I kind of really learned this when we got our dog a long, long time ago. And you have to go on long walks, right? The dog needs long walks. And so when I would go for these long walks at night, I could think so much clearer as I was just out walking. And so that's what would go for long walks means is you've got to just disconnect from everything else. And you've got to open up your mind and give yourself time to think. And you analyze whatever you're working on from so many different ways. Does it come up with a sound bite that you need when you're on media, or helping you think through what you think the public interest is, but what does somebody else think it is, or what opportunities are out there for you? It works for everything, but go for long walks because it gives yourself time to think. You need that time.
So it's the me time you're talking about.
Well, me time is different. Me time, yeah. I mean, you go play golf or tennis or read or whatever. That's different. This is work time. In a way, right? I'm trying to, you know, it's both, but this is work time, but you got to disconnect, and you can do this for a good 45 minute hour walk. If you can do that every night, which when I don't anymore, but I used to, and I don't know why I miss it because I can do it anyway, but it really gives you the time to think, and that's different than me time.
Yep. Yeah, no, I do see the difference and I see the benefit. I see the benefit of the disconnection of letting your subconscious just take over and process everything that you're needing to process for that day. That's an excellent point. And I don't think I've gone for enough long walk. So, you know, Stephen, I will take you up on that and I'll start that tonight. Okay. Lesson number four, bet on yourself. What do you mean by that?
I mean, there will be times when you come to a crossroads in your career, you have a choice to make. And one option will be, you know, the safer option, stay with an existing job, do what you're continuing to do. Another one will be, you're going to have to take a chance and, you know, go out and start up your own business or do something where it's going to be riskier for you than staying in your comfort zone. And what I think betting on yourself is always a good bet. You know what you're capable of, and you then have to go make it happen. And so you know, now you may lose, you're not going to be 100% when you gamble on anything. But I think it's a really smart bet when you're betting on yourself. And I don't think people do it enough. I think they don't have faith in themselves. They look at the risk reward, they undervalue themselves. And so I think that's why I say, you know, bet on yourself.
Absolutely. A lot of people do undervalue themselves, yeah, quite drastically. And you're not the first of our guests to come up with basically believe in yourself, yeah, self-confidence lessons. But it just shows how valuable that lesson is and how important it is for us to do that, to believe in ourselves.
Bet on yourself and believe in yourself are slightly different. You have to believe in yourself. But if you believe in yourself, but you don't take action, then so what, right? Betting on yourself is say, I believe in myself and I'm going to take this action that comes with a risk. Bets are risky, right? There's no sure thing in when you bet on anything. And so I think it's taking it. If you don't believe in yourself, you're not going to bet on yourself. So you have to believe in yourself. And then you also have to take some risk. And that's what I would mean by betting on yourself.
Can you say that again?
Okay, so believing in yourself is that you understand, right? You say, I'm good, I know what my value is, but betting on yourself is taking action, right? Betting on yourself, there's risk when you bet. And you say, this is going to be a risk, but because I believe in myself, I'm willing to take this chance because I think I'm going to be successful at it, or I'm more likely to be successful at it than otherwise. So I think betting on yourself is taking it to an action level as opposed to believing in yourself.
That is such a subtle difference. And I never thought of that before. Thank you, Stephen. You're absolutely spot on. Because yes, we all have the self-confidence. Well, those of us that do it. And I suppose we confuse that self-confidence with the action. But they are two separate things. Okay. So lesson number four, bet on yourself. This is why I love doing this show, Stephen, because I learn something new every time. Every time. Let's go to lesson number five, which is, I would say this is linked to lesson number four, know your value.
Yeah, you know, it is linked and I put this kind of in the work context. But you have to understand, right, whatever you're doing, how does it fit in, right, to the company? And certainly if it could be an NGO, it could be government, it could be a for-profit, but what is it? What's the mission of that? And we'll use business because that's the easiest, right? What's the mission of that business? And how do you add to the bottom line if you're talking about working for a for-profit organization? And unless you know how you directly are contributing to that mission of the company, then you're not going to know your value. And if you don't know your value, it becomes much more difficult to advocate for yourself. So if, you know, it becomes more difficult to ask for a raise or if your boss says, we're going to get 3% this year. So no, I deserve 10%. And here's why I deserve 10%, because you can articulate the value you have brought. Now, when you make that, you better be willing to bet on yourself, because you may end up somewhere else if he disagrees with you or she disagrees with you. Right? But it's knowing your value. So you have to go and say, what is it that my boss is trying to accomplish or my boss's bosses? And that's when you can better advocate for yourself, is to just say, well, I'm good and I do good work. Okay. How does it tie into the business?
So knowing your value lets you advocate for yourself.
Yes.
Now that's fantastic. Thank you, Stephen. Well, we're speaking today with Stephen Oken, the founder and CEO of APAC Advisors, and he's recently the chair of the AmChams of Asia Pacific, as well as the senior advisor to McClarty Associates, and just a really knowledgeable human being. And we're very proud to have you. Thank you very much again, Stephen. So let's move on to lesson number six. Be generous with your time, and that will help you grow your network. Is that correct?
The networking piece is ancillary to it. But I mean, I think that, you know, you do have some, you know, hopefully you feel an obligation to share with others what you've learned, as others have shared with me. I've had, you know, so many mentors over my career, you know, from teachers, of course, but then, you know, the two general counsels I worked for at the Department of Transportation, the partner I worked for at a law firm, the the head of global public affairs, both at UPS and KKR's. And I've sought out so many other people for their advice. Well, when it gets to be your turn, you need to be generous with your time. And so I will try never, ever to turn down a student, somebody, you know, right out of school, and just try and just, you know, share with what you can. Now, by doing that, that is going to, you know, help you as well, because one of the most important things you can do from a, certainly if you're in my career area, public affairs, and is having a wide network. But if you can share your time with that wide network, it will pay off. Not while you do it, but it certainly has benefits.
Yeah, no, definitely not while you do it. If you're doing it to get a payday, you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. And this is, you know, part of the hard work, the really hard work of growing a network is, you know, maybe that payday comes from one person you've met out of 100. And so you could probably have a lot more valuable time than spending doing 100 meetings, hoping one pays off. But it's the enjoyment of meeting people, the enjoyment of connecting people. Yeah, there could be a payoff, but growing your network is a benefit. And so you have to be generous with your time. And if you're not, then why is anyone going to be generous back to you?
That is so true. Running the chamber for 7 years, that's what I did. I connected people, and I was always there for the members of the American Chamber in Australia. And that's one of the reasons we're doing this podcast, for exactly that. We want to give back. And this goes for all of our hosts. We're doing it because we want to give back to our community, which has given us so much. So I couldn't agree more with that. Be generous with your time, and, you know, pay it forward is another way, I suppose, of saying it. Fantastic. All right. Well, let's move on to lesson number 7. Okay. This is another one you're going to have to explain.
Okay.
Get your hands dirty.
Yeah. This came from a partner I worked for it when I got right out of law school. And if you want to be good at what you do, you're working on a problem, and it could be a legal problem, it could be a business problem, whatever it is, you got to get your hands dirty. You've got to really start digging, right? What is it that is the issue? So if you're a young lawyer, you go through, you know, tens, maybe hundreds of cases trying to find, right, that right one. And so that's getting your hands dirty. If you're working on a policy issue, you need to attack it from every possible angle, because only then will you know how the public interest is defined, right? What do the business community think about it? What do the NGOs think about it? What does government think about it? What's happened in the past? And you got to get your hands dirty. I mean, there's no other way to find that out without doing the hard work. So, yeah. So getting your hands dirty is kind of a little bit of an American way of saying, do the hard work. You have to do the hard work, not somebody else. Because as you're digging and as you're learning these things, your thinking is then going to change, as opposed to if somebody does it for you and you read it, you're not going to internalize it nearly as well. So you got to get your hands dirty. And I think that goes for work, but then it also goes for what you do in the community. You will get so much more out of what you're doing to help your community by getting your hands dirty. I mean, you know, figuratively going out and doing a beach cleanup, going out into the villages and working in an orphanage, or working with a social enterprise, and doing the hard work, you know, going to a school and spending the time with the children. That is where you are going. Money is important, and by all means give money. But when you can get your hands dirty in the community, and that you get it, just as you do at work, where you're going to become much more effective and smarter, you are going to get more out of it, and they are going to appreciate the time you've given in helping the community.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board. I volunteer for several charities, and I know the feeling you're talking about, the fulfillment you get by doing the work, by being there for your community. Is just, there's no way to express what that feeling is like unless you go and do it yourself. So I encourage all of you listeners and viewers, go get your hands dirty, because you will, you'll write to Steve and say, thank you, Stephen, for suggesting I do this, because that's, seriously, there's nothing better. Okay. Lesson number 8, no job is beneath you, which I totally agree with, even though I have worked for and seen many, many people who think that there are things beneath them. There is no job beneath you. So, Stephen, give us a little more on that.
Well, I think I was just kind of a story when, you know, when I was back at the Department of Transportation, you know, the general counsel had to, we were working on her testimony for a Senate hearing. And like, this was in the 90s, you know, we did not have the technology we have today. And she really got her hands dirty, and we were editing her testimony, looking things up and rewriting it. And then, you know, it's like probably 9-10 o'clock at night, and the hearings like at 8 the next morning. And now when we finally get it done, now we got to print everything out. And then you have to, you know, you have to collate it, and you got to staple everything together. Obviously the secretaries, you know, and admins had all gone home, you know, so she's doing that. But that job needed to get done. It didn't matter that the general counsel, right, was going to be testifying herself. And that here's a presidential appointee who'd been confirmed by the Senate. She's stapling papers because it had to get done. And I remember like somebody came in and they're like, what's Nancy doing? She's stapling. What do you think she's doing? Why is she stapling? Because it has to get done. It's her testimony. I'm doing it too, of course. But I mean, but that's, you know, if the job's got to get done, it's got to get done. And if you're part of it, do it. Now, if there's somebody else to do it and you can be doing something else that's helping the job get done, of course you do that. But if something's important enough that it needs to get done, then it's not beneath you. When you as a leader are willing to do that, that will just so inspire, as you could see the story I'm telling, you know, 30 some odd years, or not quite 30 years after it happened. But that's the kind of stuff that will inspire such loyalty and devotion and hard work of the team.
And quite frankly, if you take that mindset of nothing is beneath you, and as a leader, if you lead and stand shoulder to shoulder with your team, as opposed to being at the back and saying, you do this, you do that, you will inspire them. You will get more loyalty, more productivity out of the entire team. That's a great anecdote, Stephen. It's a great lesson. All right. Well, yeah. Let's move on to lesson number 9. Be passionate about what you do and show it. That seems pretty straightforward. What have we got around this one?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward. I don't think most people do it. I mean, I think so. Well, for the be passionate about what you do, I mean, so it's very important that you whatever your job would be is something you want to be passionate about. I think the most people would agree with that piece about it. So, I mean, if you don't love what you're doing, it becomes work. And yeah, you'll get it done, but you won't get it done as well, and you won't get as much out of it. So obviously the first thing is you pick something to do that you love doing. Yeah, you may not love it 100% of the time, but even if it's 70-30, you know, that's going to be a great ratio. So be passionate about what you do, but then you have to show it. I mean, and I think, you know, this is kind of a lesson I've taken because I do a fair amount of media now, you know, and when I'm, you know, talking about something with you, I would hope now or television, radio, whatever it be, you be excited about it. You show why it is that you are caring about what you say. And then people will go, oh, if he cares, then I want to listen, you know, to what he has to say. If she is showing emotion and excitement while she's talking, then I'm going to be more likely to be excited about what she's talking. And I don't understand why I see so many people, they give speeches, they go on, you know, the TV, radio, whatever they do. And it's just
the deadpan.
And it's, if you're not excited about it, why is the listener going to be excited about it? And why are they asking you to talk about it unless you are excited about it? So I think you've got to, you know, to use an American slang, I mean, you got to bring it, right? And when you are in a meeting and you're passionate about something, show it, bring it. And that, I think what some people maybe worry about a bit is, oh, well, they're judging, you know, why is this person so excited? How come everybody else is deadpan and they're not, like, no one's judging, right? They're worried about how everybody else is thinking about them to be thinking about you while you're thinking about how they're thinking about you and they're not. So show the excitement. Don't worry about it because nobody really cares. And then you're going to get listened to more, thought, more attention, and you'll probably get more opportunity to do those types of things if that's something that you want.
Absolutely. I've watched you on MSNBC. Every time you're on, Stephen, you're very passionate about whatever you're talking about. And it comes across, one, you are knowledgeable, you know what you're talking about. But two, it motivates them to listen to why this man is so gung-ho about this topic and opens up their mind. And they do listen more. So, and it's the same with work. You're absolutely spot on. And with everything you do, if you're passionate about it, then, you know, that passion could be infectious.
It will be. You're going to be passionate about it. Let it come out. Mm. Don't bottle it up. And for whatever reason, I think some people bottle up because they're afraid of how they're going to get judged. Why are you so excited about this? We're at a meeting or whatever. No, show it.
Yeah. I just love what you said. I mean, no one's judging you.
They're worried about how you're judging them to be the CEO, right? They're not judging you. You're not judging them.
Absolutely.
Just do it.
No, that is a wonderful lesson. And, you know, the one thing I would say to viewers and listeners is, if you're not passionate about something you're doing, why are you doing it?
Yep. And if you can, Howard, sometimes, okay, you may need a paycheck or there may be some reason you have to do something. Yes. But it, after a while, find something you are passionate about doing.
Yeah. If it's within your power, do it. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move to lesson number 10. Now, Stephen, I like this, but you know, it's a well-duh moment. Physical fitness improves everything. There's got to be something more to it than that.
I mean, there really isn't. But it's something I've learned, right? I mean, I've certainly, you know, gone into better shape and not better shape and in and out. I mean, nothing drastic or transformative that I've done. But again, it's an investment. I mean, you've got to put the time in. And now, look, if you do that hour walk mm-hmm. and think at the same time, I mean, there's ways to do more, but when I've been really consistent in going to the gym, going for walks, whatever it is that I do, the benefits you get, it really improves how you think. It just gives you such a different, it clears your mind. It when you're healthier, you have a different perspective when you feel better. So I have not done this consistently throughout my life. I've been okay, but more and more as I've certainly gotten older, wanted to be in good shape for somebody my age. And then you notice that improvement comes in a lot of different areas, and certainly mentally. So it's more important to stay physically fit, especially as we hit into our 50s and beyond.
Well, I'm going to leave that one alone because I know what you're saying. Yeah. But yeah, to support what you've just said, it is important. And you know, we've had several guests who have brought this up. Going for long walks is one thing because we're talking about clearing your mind, letting your subconscious work and having that clarity of thought. But the physical fitness aspect of it is, as you've just said, an investment. If you neglect that, you're going to have to pay a higher price to get back there. Think of it as buying stocks when, you know, when they're low. Get out there now, get yourself into good physical condition and maintain it as opposed to struggling to drop 50 pounds or you know, 25 kilos or whatever it is that you want to drop. Get it into shape now and maintain it. And you'll find, as Stephen has just said, you're going to be more productive. You're going to think clearer and you're going to be healthier. And it's not a big investment. But it's an investment in time. Don't make it a big investment later on, right?
Well, you just, you know, brought to mind the person who created public affairs for UPS who, you know, hired me out of government. He would always, you talk about maintenance, right? Why maintenance, you know, is so important. He said, you know, UPS, you know, the premier global logistics company in the world, right? When do we change, you know, the oil in the package cars? Do we wait for the engine to break down? Or do we do it on a regular basis and have that low investment in maintenance, which is a lot cheaper and a lot more effective than waiting till something breaks down?
Yep.
Yeah. So absolutely.
But don't we, I mean, as human beings, we all do wait for it to break down if you can change it.
Well, if it becomes a lot more expensive.
It does.
Hopefully you learn that lesson only once.
Very true. But Yeah, that is a brilliant lesson. And that is that's also, I mean, I'm not trying to be glib, but it is powerful. It might be common. It might be, you know, something that people say is common sense, but it is powerful. Think about it. The maintenance analogy is brilliant. Just maintain it.
Yeah.
Well, that takes us through all your 10 lessons, Stephen. Now, let me ask you the one thing. We're talking about lessons you've learned. Let's talk about something that you have unlearned. So in your career, in your life, is there a lesson that you have unlearned? Something that you at one stage in your life thought, yeah, I will follow this doctrine because I believe in it. And then later on found out, you know what? I was wrong.
I think it goes back, kind of encapsulating a fair amount of what we talked about. But I used to have kind of long-term plans, and now I don't know, maybe this is living in Asia, but I don't think you should have anything more than a 5-year plan. I mean, have a good 5-year plan. What is it that you want to try and do for the next 5 years? And then worry about the second 5-year plan after that. So when I came to Singapore, you know, I came here for UPS and I was going to be here for 5 years, and then I was going to, you know, go back home to the United States. And you know, now said, well, that's not what ended up happening, and I'm glad it didn't. And so instead of having that plan that was going to be, you know, one continuous plan, I'm now, you know, in year 3 of my third 5-year plan, living in Singapore. And I'm going to need a fourth 5-year plan coming up. And so I think that at most think in 5-year blocks. And had I done that differently, that maybe I'd have ended up doing the same place I am now. But I think that's, I've gotten rid of long-term plan.
Yeah, that's interesting. That is, that's a new one for us. We've not heard that, but that makes a lot of sense, though. It does make a lot of sense. Now, look, Stephen, I really appreciate you making time for us today. I know how busy you are, and believe me, the fact that you have given up your time and been so generous with us and our audience is just wonderful. So thank you again. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, and now I'm going to go off to the gym.
And I will sign off. So on that note, our guest today has been Stephen Okun, the founder and CEO of APAC Advisors. You've been listening to 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn. This episode was supported by the Professional Development Forum, PDF. PDF provides webinars, social media discussions, podcasts, parties, and you can find them by visiting professionaldevelopmentforum.org. And the best part is everything they provide is free. If you've enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review, a comment, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss the next episode of the only podcast on the internet, Making the World Wiser, Lesson by Lesson. Thank you, and see you on the next episode of 10 Lessons It Took Me 50 Years to Learn.